Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
And welcome, everybody, to another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation. I'm your host, Lewis Sung, and I'm joined by Chris Early, otherwise known as Duke. No Ron, no Eric, no Alf today. Everybody's off doing their own things. Life goes on. The show must go on. So me and Duke will be holding it down for you all this time. Make sure that if you have not already done so, you going to prizepicks.com, use the promo code 5, that's F-I-V-E, and they will match up to $100 on your initial deposit when you sign up. For those of you inside the South Florida market, which there are many of you, I am sure, don't worry. They're working on getting you back in the game as soon as possible. Speaking of getting into the game, you can use the links in the description of this YouTube video right now to go to My Nintendo Store. You'll be able to get your hands on Super Mario RPG or Super Mario Brothers Wonder, both awesome games for you to be able to enjoy, and you'll get bonus items upon making your purchase. All right. So, topics for the show tonight. I went out on Twitter and I wanted to, again, this show was originally designed to take the pulse of Fins Nation, which means it's not about me, it's not about Duke, it's not about Alf, not about any of these guys, it's about you all, the listeners, and you guys in the comments, and you guys on Twitter who are making these requests. And by the way, sometimes I also go to OnlyFans, not OnlyFans. I said only, it's OnlyFins, not OnlyFans. I'm sorry. I'm so used to saying things the right way. But OnlyFins, $3 a month for the 3 yards per carry official Discord server. You get some of the best Dolphins talk out there, not to mention some inside information that you will not get on Twitter. For those of you who just need a little bit of an example, Alf actually reported something like over a week ago, and now it's becoming public knowledge now. So there's your proof. These guys are plugged in. They know what they're talking about. So make sure you hit on to OnlyFins and get in on that. Now then, so topics we're going to discuss tonight. Odell Beckham Jr. came in for a free agent visit. We talked about it briefly, I believe, on a Take 5 that I had here on the 5 Reasons Sports Network. Also was talked about with Ethan and Dono on their show. So we're going to get into it, you and me now, Duke. And I'll just kind of reiterate where I'm at. I know what privately Ron is very much against the move. He doesn't like the move. I think Chad Ronnebaum, who is also a guest on this show fairly often, he also is not a fan of the move. I don't think I ever got your official thoughts on it. But for me, I was the one who was advocating to bring in Michael Thomas because I wanted a veteran wide receiver, a reliable target for your number 3 wide receiver. Somebody like a Michael Thomas would have been perfect for that role. Now, if you're going to say Odell Beckham Jr., then I'm going to say, okay, that works for me too. Odell Beckham Jr., for all of his off-the-field drama, which at this point I feel like it's overblown. He's in his 30s. Things have calmed down for him for the most part. And so the only thing that isn't calm with him is that the fact that he's currently dating a Kardashian, and that in and of itself is drama by default. That said, as far as a wide receiver, he is sure-handed. He has amazing footwork. He runs excellent routes. He knows excellent technique. And in Baltimore, we watched it happen in Baltimore. Odell Beckham Jr. made a fantastic catch that we were all gung-ho saying, not a catch. And then we saw the replay and it was like, okay, well, yeah, maybe it's a catch after all. And we were just kind of left scratching our heads thinking, Why is Odell Beckham Jr. still making these catches in his 30s? Sometimes you're just good. And he ended up being the second leading receiver, at least wide receiver, on the entire Baltimore Ravens team that year. Now, granted, Lamar Jackson being a very run-heavy type of quarterback, it's not a crime to say that Lamar Jackson has accuracy issues. He does. It's just reality of life. You can accept it. You can deal with it because everything else that he brings to the table makes up for the fact. But he does have injury issues. And if you look at the highlights of Odell Beckham Jr.'s time in Baltimore, brief though it was, he's making incredible catches. Some of them look easy, just little slants into the house. Some of them he's having to dive and make it so that Lamar's bad throw gets made up for because he has to go up there and get it, and he does. Like, this man does not drop passes. I don't think that's something we can say about Tyreek Hill right now. We can't even say that about Jalen Waddle. Odell Beckham Jr. does not drop passes. He is a very, very reliable target. And if he's your choice for wide receiver 3 on an offense, I'm all for it. Now, I'm not willing to give him $11 million or $15 million or whatever it is he might be asking for. Maybe that's why he left without a contract. But if we can get him for like 7 or 8, and if he wants, he can throw some incentives in there, I'd be down for that, because at least then that gives you a little more flexibility in the draft to choose truly the best player available. And before anybody comments on this, Duke, man, I don't know if this is where you're going to be going with this, that even signing Odell Beckham does not stop the Dolphins from drafting a stud wide receiver. If they want to go wide receiver at 21, they can. Maybe they trade down and they go to 20 and get a wide receiver. This is a draft loaded with wide receiver talent, not just from the top down. It's right there in the middle. There's excellent, excellent value that you can get in the later rounds. So even if the Dolphins don't go with their first round pick a wide receiver in the second round, there's still plenty of guys to choose from. So that's where I'm at with Odell Beckham Jr. If they can get him at a decent price, I'm all for it. I'm not going to break the bank for him. So if the Dolphins decide not to do it, I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. It's kind of where I am with where I was with the Dalvin Cook stuff. Like, if you can get him, great, but it's going to be at our price. If you can't, oh well, not going to lose any sleep over it. So I'll go ahead and let you give your thoughts on the OBJ stuff.
Okay. So, well, he signed with Baltimore last year prior to the draft. And they had one receiving target that was kind of a high-profile receiver, which was Rashad Bateman, a first-round pick. And he is not quite panned out. They had Nelson Aguilar. And so they really needed a receiver. So they brought in Odell Beckham, who was going to be their number one guy. And then they went to the draft and got Zay Flowers, who proceeded to be the number one target getter for the Ravens. So they weren't necessarily expecting that. And so he kind of fell into a role there where he was the third guy. Obviously, Mark Andrews is in that conversation, although he's not a wide receiver. So, and he got hurt and missed some time. So Odell Beckham became the number two target. But the expectation for his signing and such a high deal was that he was going to be the number one guy, or at worst, the number two guy. Mark Andrews is probably always going to be their top target as long as he's there, and it was going to be him. It just didn't fall. It didn't necessarily fall that way overall. So I think, with that expectation with Miami, he already knows he's coming in as the third receiver. He's not number one and not number two. That doesn't mean he won't be the number one or number two guy in certain games. Maybe someone gets hurt. Maybe someone gets taken out by a defensive scheme, and they limit that. But he's going to be the number three guy. And with that comes a number three salary. And so I agree with the Dolphins for staying on their price point. As a player, I still like Odell Beckham. He's not, you know, the cover of Madden Odell Beckham. You're not getting that guy. But he's still a productive receiver. He had 64 targets last year, 35 catches, 565 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Averaged 16.1 yards per reception. So he was very productive down the field. But I believe it was Omar Kelly this week wrote a very good article about Odell Beckham and what Miami needs from that third wide receiver. And he pointed out they need a guy that can make those tough catches across the middle and hold on to it. And we've seen Tyreek do that, and we've seen Jaylen Waddle do that. But we know Odell Beckham can do that. And the main thing, and we discussed this last week on the show, was that Miami needs that third option, whether that's a wide receiver, whether it is a tight end. Maybe Jonnu Smith becomes that guy if they can't sign Beckham. But they need a third target that is reliable when teams start to focus on taking Hill and Waddle out of the equation. And some of the better teams can do that. For example, we're going to play San Francisco this year. And those guys have great linebackers, and they're going to take out some of that stuff that Tua makes his money on. What you need is a guy that can take out some of that scheme and be productive when the main targets get taken away. And so if Beckham's their guy, I'm all for it. And like you said, I don't think it precludes them from drafting a wide receiver. We mentioned last week, I think it was Alf mentioned, that this draft is too deep for receivers and too good at receiver not to come away with one. And maybe that's not at 21. Maybe there's a guy there at 21 that they like. But at some point, they need to look at this draft and get a receiver. But, yeah, I don't have a problem with Odell Beckham coming in. And I know a lot of people probably don't like some of the periphery that comes with that, maybe the off-field stuff or maybe the image or whatever it is. I don't know. But I think that he would be a productive player. The only question that I would have, and this really goes for any player, would be, if the Dolphins season doesn't go the way they expect it to go, and would he turn sour? Because, you know, at this stage in his career, he wants to play for – he's not going to go play for Carolina, okay? Carolina could probably offer him more money. Some of these other teams might could offer more money, but he doesn't want to go play for a team that's going to win three or four games. He wants to play for a team that's going to compete. So if Miami is, you know, sitting there at a 8-6 kind of deal, is he going to kind of – you know, tune out at that point. But that's, you know, that's not something you can bank on. So again, I'm good with that move. I think he's probably the best option available if you want to go that route. So yeah, I'm good with it.
Yeah. And that's where I'm at it too. Now I'll go ahead and just mention that most of the criticisms of the Odell Beckham Jr. stuff right now, and I'll mention it. This is stuff that Ron talked about in our brain trust chat, as it were, on Twitter, is that Odell Beckham Jr. does not fix the problem of Tua not having the time to actually look at third or fourth reads. Because that has been, and I'll admit it, this has been my contention for some time now too. Like, if you want Tua to be able to take that next step, Tua should not be forced into having to make the first read and fire. That's it's great in principle. And when the offense is firing on all cylinders, that's fantastic. It's fun to watch. It's incredible. It's some of the best football we've ever seen. Certainly some of the best football I've ever seen. I'm a younger fan. But if for whatever reason that first read is not there, then Tua doesn't have time to look around the field and find somebody because he's going to be flat on his face. So okay, in that regard...
So what year were you born or round about? Did you watch any of the Marino years?
I did not watch not firsthand. I watched secondhand with my father, who is also watching this show, but he is but I watched Marino through him. So I did not get to really witness this, it at his greatest.
The 2023 Miami Dolphins was the best offense in your lifetime.
100%.
So one of the things that I mentioned this today on the Finsider, and it's something that and look, you know me from way back. I've argued for the offensive line for a million years.
I used to listen to you on the Finsider, man. I know. Yeah, you're the offensive line.
And I am all for improving the offensive line. And there are a couple of guys in this draft that I will be over the moon if they are able to come away with those guys. I've seen some mock drafts today where Miami got a couple of dudes. I was like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about on the offensive line. But the difference between The difference between a really bad guard and a really good guard is less of a difference than a really bad skill position player versus a really good skill position player. And I bring this up because one of those mock drafts is Mike Tannenbaum. And he picked Miami having JPJ, I think it's Jackson Powers Johnson or something like that, from Oregon, the center. He would play guard here in Miami, which that's fine. He's going to improve the offensive line. The next pick was Brock Bowers to the Philadelphia Eagles. And my thought was, if that happens, I'm going to riot. I'm going to start a riot. Because the difference between that guy at guard versus Liam Eichenberg is less of a difference in impact than what you would get from Bowers, assuming they both hit. What you would get from Bowers over a guy like Durham Smythe. That difference is far more significant than what you would get at guard. So while I'm all for Miami improving the offensive line, and I hope they can do, they need to also look at, you know, improving other areas. And I think that's one of the reasons they're looking at a guy like Odell Beckham. So they can say, you know what, I'm going to maybe we're not going to marry ourselves to adding that additional guy, or at least early. And maybe that's the thing. I think it was a quote from Mike McDaniel this week at the owners' meetings. I don't have it pulled up in front of me, so I can't do it quote for quote. But basically, he said,
"I do. I have it up." What were you referring to?
Well, he's talking about not necessarily focusing on positions in the draft as much as adding overall impact with your draft picks. And when I read that, my first thought was he's looking at a wide receiver. That was my first thought, because everybody has a defensive tackle or an offensive lineman. Because what did they lose in free agency? Offensive lineman, defensive tackle. But I don't think they're looking at it that way. And I think that might be some signs of how Greer has grown as a general manager, where he's not going to be drafting necessarily for need. He's not saying, well, we need an offensive guard, and Miami does. But it's not a situation where it's like, well, we have to have that, so I'm going to get that, particularly in that mock draft when you have – better players, and Brock Bowers is considered, you know, by many as a top 10 caliber player in this draft. You don't pass up a talent like that for a lower rated player or at a lower rated position. So I know I'm kind of going off the rails with all that, but my point going back to Odell Beckham is like they're looking to improve areas in the skill position, despite the fact that they've got some talented skill position players. And so I don't have a problem with them doing that, whether it be through free agency or be through the draft. And honestly, outside of the quarterback position, there's not really a lot they can screw up at 21.
No, I really don't think they can. Like, by the way, we'll talk about Tua Tagovailoa, because some people on Twitter was asking us to see if we would just go ahead and let Tua play on the fifth year option. I know that there's, I put up a mock draft where in the seventh round, I had Miami drafting Talia Tagovailoa, and that's just seventh round quarterback, developmental guy. Obviously he would love to be with his brother, and they're going to work together to push and challenge themselves. As far as I'm concerned, that's a perfect match. And at worst, you have a good backup and you don't have to pay Mike White $10 million. But that's neither here nor there at the moment. We'll get to that. Indade is in the chat, and he's bringing up a whole bunch of different names for Miami to look at, including some of them, including Dalton Risner, Lakin Tomlinson, Mekhi Becton. I don't know Dillard. Is that Andre Dillard? I'm not sure if that's his name or not.
We'll go ahead and say no to him.
No, Andre Dillard, don't like him?
I mean, he didn't pan out for the Eagles. He went to Tennessee and didn't pan out with Tennessee. Maybe he comes here, but if you're getting lots of snaps from him, you're probably in trouble. I think you would do better with Keon Smith, and that's just being real. I'm a Keon Smith fan, by the way.
So am I.
So I think that dude's got something, and I would love to see him become like the left tackle of the future. I'm not going to put expectations on that, but I would like to see it. But, yeah, no to Andre Dillard. Not with some of those other names on there, no.
No, I'll briefly go off on a little side tangent here. That's why if I'm going to have the Dolphins pick anybody at offensive line, and I talked about it last week, I would rather Miami just choose a dedicated guard, like a really, really, really good guard. Because on the one hand, you have Teron Armstead, who's at left tackle, and this is probably his last year in Miami, let's be real. It might be his last year in the NFL for all we know. But with that being said, you have Teron Armstead at left tackle, and while he's there, he is an all-pro player, and he's healthy. Boom, you got that settled as long as he's there. But with guard, right now, our best option, once again, and this is my biggest issue, once again, our best option is Isaiah Wynn, who granted he was good, but he got hurt and he never came back. And that's not something that I'm willing to risk a second time with so much on the line here. We're talking about giving to a huge boatload of cash, and we're having all these expectations placed upon him for it, but we're not going to give him the offensive line support that he needs. We're going to grab a bunch of injury-prone journeymen who may work in this system and may not, and that's a problem for me. Indade brought up the list. Laken Tomlinson, he didn't do well with the Jets. He literally made a big contract because of what he did in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel. It's an easy fix.
And he was released, so he will not count against comp pick formulas. So they could sign him tomorrow, and it will not affect any of the comp picks.
You still get your two third-rounders.
Some of those other names would, such as Mekhi Becton. Mekhi Becton is a guy I would look at. Now, after the draft, I think it's the week after the draft, anyone you sign at that point no longer counts against the comp pick formula. So they could go out and sign every one of those players the week after the draft, and it doesn't matter if they were cut, contract was up, whatever. But I do like Mekhi Becton for a couple of reasons. One, he's young. He's the same age as Austin Jackson. I think he's actually a little bit younger than Austin Jackson.
How many games has he played?
But you got to go back and look at that a little bit, too, that he had that knee injury, and he went, like, public with some stuff about how the Jets just kind of mistreated him with that. Basically made him, like, I don't remember all of what it was, but it was basically like they either rushed him back or he didn't get quite the care that he needed for that leg, and it just led to more injuries. So he's a guy that's not going to sign a big contract. And maybe there's some medicals there. I think he had a visit with the Cincinnati Bengals, and they didn't sign.
But does he fit the offense, though, Duke? Mekhi Becton's a big dude. Like, is he a super athletic?
Well, and I guess
they're looking for.
And that goes back to what Mike McDaniel said last year. He said, "Look, if you could create an offensive lineman that was 6'8", 400 pounds, sure, they would take all kinds of those guys." So, I mean, is he an ideal necessarily zone blocky fit? No, but he's a planet kind of guy. There's just not too many guys like that out there. And again, you're not looking at him to come in and start. You're not even looking at him necessarily to make the roster. You're just bringing him in. You wait till after the draft. You say, I'm going to bring this guy in, sign him for a one-year deal with some incentives, and say, hey, you're probably going to get to play with this offensive line. Blows my mind. I look at every offensive line on other teams. Look at the Bills. All five of their starting offensive linemen played 90%+ of the snaps. The Chiefs, most of their offensive line played 90%+ of the snaps. Austin Jackson was the only one for the Dolphins that played 90% of the snaps. None of the other starters played over 50% of the snaps. So I don't know what it is. I don't know what's in the water down there, but
whatever's in the water that's infecting the Miami Heat, because they don't have any healthy players right now either.
Yeah, whatever's going on, you're going to get an opportunity to play on this Dolphins offensive line. Just, you know, Isaiah Wynn, Teron Armstead, they missed time their whole career. That's probably going to happen. You bring him in and let him compete, and you say, hey, you know what? If it all clicks, if it finally comes together for you, you've got a guy that's going to be 25, I think, at the end of the season. You sign him to a deal then, and maybe he gets like an Austin Jackson-style contract where it's not super big. I think Austin Jackson's like cap hits somewhere around like $11, $12 million, which is really good for a free agent offensive tackle contract. So you get into a deal like that perhaps, and it works out for you. And if it doesn't, well, you know, it's not that big of a financial hit on you. But it's worth a shot. Now, some of those other names you mentioned, like Dalton Risder, I mentioned that last year. He would have familiarity with Butch Berry. I don't know why they didn't look at him.
But he made it public that he's not signing unless he's guaranteed a starting spot.
Well, I mean, he'd probably get it here in Miami, but he probably.
But that's not the point. He wants public acknowledgement that he is the starter. Like, he doesn't want to come in like, oh, I'm going to compete and I'm going to win the job. No, he's like, no, like, I want everybody to know that I'm coming in and I'm starting. Like, make an announcement that I'm the new
starter. He's gonna be there in June and possibly July. He's gonna wait till training camp then, because that's just how that stuff goes. But yeah, some of those other names. I was a fan of Ashton Davis. I don't know why he didn't really catch on with the Jets. Maybe they just jet on him. But Justin Simmons would be a guy they could bring in. We mentioned that last week about adding an additional safety.
Simmons, though, I feel like he's not going to want to share too many snaps with Holland and Poyer.
If you look at the usage that Baltimore did last year of their safeties, I mean, I think three of the top five were safeties, and five or six out of the top 10 were defensive backs. The defensive backs, and if we assume that Anthony Weaver is going to have a scheme that runs like Baltimore's, they're going to be very secondary based, and it's going to have a lot of usage from the safety position and cornerback position. Now, the oddball thing there would be if they decide to use Jalen Ramsey kind of in a corner safety hybrid position where he moves,
which I 100% expect that though, Duke, because they'd be stupid to not use Jalen Ramsey to the best of his ability. When he was with the Rams, what was he doing? When he was at his best, what was he doing? He was all over the place. You could not pin down where Jalen Ramsey was.
And I think the addition of Kendall Fuller in free agency kind of adds to that, because I think a lot of people just on the outside are looking at it like, well, you've got Jalen Ramsey and now you've got Kendall Fuller. And Dolphins fans are like, well, what about Cam Smith? Well, Cam Smith is a cornerback. He's probably an outside cornerback, and they're going to play him a lot at that position. I think he's going to get a lot of run this year, whether he's good or bad. I think he's going to be out there. But you're going to see a lot of Kendall Fuller, Cam Smith, Kader Kohou, or Nick Needham is that nickel, with Ramsey and Holland and Poyer all on the field at the same time. And I'm talking about 75 to 80% of the snaps this year usage.
That's fine with me. So we'll go ahead and get into the next topic here. So I know that fans, this is what the Pulse of Fins Nation is all about. It's all about the quarterback at the end of the day, I guess. So we'll talk a little bit about this whole Tua Tagovailoa thing. Now, to be fair, and I'll go ahead and just give the information the way that it is right now, Tua Tagovailoa currently at this moment is Miami's technically the second highest cap number on the roster. It would have been Xavier Howard, but on over the cap, there's like a big cross right through Xavier Howard's name. So Howard would have been number two. He's gone now, so Miami's going to be getting that money off the books shortly. Now, with that said, Tua is currently counting against $23 million against the cap. The discussion right now is whether Tua should just be forced to play on the fifth-year option and let Miami finally make a final judgment on him. And I personally, I don't even think that it's Miami. Let's be real. Let's be real right now. It's not for the Dolphins to make a final judgment on Tua. It's for Dolphins fans to make a final judgment on Tua. Because Miami, as far as they're concerned, has already made their judgment. Tua's the guy. They're looking to extend him. And even if it goes all the way into training camp, the intention on all sides is to get that extension done at some point. There is no question of whether Tua's going to be sticking around for an extended period. It's done. He's going to be here. The only question is, how much is he going to be getting paid? So the discussion of whether it's make him play on the fifth-year option or not, that comes down more to skepticism from the fan base, basically saying, Tua hasn't won any big games that we care about, and so he doesn't deserve to get this extension he's about to get.
Well, there's a lot of facets to this, and I saw, I don't remember what show it was, but they mentioned the Tua should go ahead and sign an extension because he's going to get that guaranteed money because he does have an injury history. You get it now while the getting's good. But also, you look at it from there are three players that the Dolphins had last season that bet on themselves. Two of them went out and signed $210 million worth of contracts this year. The other is still rehabbing and may not play again. So the question for Tua is, do I want to take what the Dolphins offer now, or do I want to bet on myself to have another great season where I lead the league in yardage, I'm top five in passing touchdowns, I have a top five passer rating, and all that good stuff, make the Pro Bowl, and possibly get more money? Or do I want to risk getting hit, getting hurt, having an issue, which he's had his whole career? I think that's his first season since either college or high school where he's played the entire season. Does he want to risk that for a little bit more money? So that I think that's going to be up to him to make that choice. I think the Dolphins are going to come out with a fair offer. But you know, I'm all for it. I think Tua's the guy. I mean, he's got limitations. And he's not going to be – he's never going to be the SportsCenter top 10 quarterback. You're just never going to see him do those.
He's not going to sprint 50 yards down the field for a touchdown. No,
that's well, not going to – you're not going to see – you're not going to see him make those Josh Allen types where he scrambles around in the pocket and runs backwards and looks like, you know, all hope is lost and he – makes a jump pass for 50 yards down the field for a touchdown kind of thing. You're not going to see that from him. You're probably not going to see a whole lot of just necessarily highlight reel passes. Excuse me. But what you are going to see is what we saw last year, a lot of accuracy, a lot of precision, a lot of timing, a lot of quick decisions. I think there's some areas of his game he needs to polish up. And we mentioned this last year. And one of that is he needs to learn to check down. I think he would take even fewer hits. He only got pressured 15.7% of the time last year, which was fourth best in the league, tied for fourth best. So he wasn't getting necessarily pressured a lot. And a lot of that had to do with his quick trigger and getting the ball out quick. But there's some layers I think they need to add in. I think adding Jonnu Smith to the roster is going to give him that tight end, that receiving tight end that he hasn't really had in this offense. Adding a third receiver, one that's a little better. I think in some of those big games, some of those better teams are able to say, you know what, we're gonna take Hill and Waddle away, and we're gonna make that other guy beat us. And before it was Berrios or Cedric Wilson, and now it could be Odell Beckham Jr. That's gonna be tough for.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 Dream Beach vacation. Imagine jet-setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Your defense, if that guy, I don't care how old he is and how long he's played and whatever, if that guy is the next guy that you're worried about or you're trying to stop, you're in trouble. He's got some weapons back there, and especially when you got a guy like Achan who can catch the ball out of the backfield, just dump the ball off in his hands and let him go.
And now that is a Tua problem though, dude.
Yes, he doesn't.
He doesn't like to do it. It's almost like he heard all the talk before that really big season when McDaniel got there, and it's like Tua just dumps the ball off for 5 yards. Like he can't throw the deep ball. It's almost like he got in his own head and said, "Okay, fine. You know what? I'll never throw it short again. I'm gonna heave it down the field every single time and watch what happens."
I don't think he was ever a check down guy. I mean, if you go back to college, he was never.
No, I know that. You know that. I know that, and you know that. But well, everybody else, he felt like he had to prove it.
The term check down is misused. It's the same level of misusage as the term reach when it comes to the draft. I hate it. It's not a reach because you don't know what the board says. All right. So if the Dolphins draft a player at 21, and everybody's like, why did they take that guy? That was a reach. They could have got him in the second. Well, you don't know that.
Detroit Lions, bro. Jack Campbell, nobody's complaining anymore. Jahmyr Gibbs, nobody's complaining anymore.
So, you look at those, but that's the same term when it comes to check down. A short pass is not a check down. A check down is when it's basically your final read or your third or fourth read when you've exhausted your options. And the other, you don't see the other openings, and you decided to take the dump off exit path. The problem with a check down quarterback is that those guys do it a lot. Those guys don't take the big plays even when they're there. And that's not Tua.
Did we not have a quarterback named Check Down Chad once upon a time?
Yeah. I mean, so the problem with Tua was it was the offense he was in. It was just designed short passes. Look at what he was doing. I remember I'm thinking back to the Chargers game, and there was a play early on. I think it was a run that Raheem Mostert had, and something happened. One of the offensive linemen got tripped or something. Anyway, he lost like 5 yards. It's second and 15, second 16. It's something in that range. The very next play, he drops back, three-step, bang, balls out to Tyreek Hill, and it's a first down. I've just never seen that. We've never seen that. Used to, a loss like that with the old Dolphins, a second and 15 was a punting down. Let's just be fair. You know what I'm talking about. Go back to 2015. Go back to 2016. All those years, second and 15 was a punting down. If they converted, it was a minor miracle. And here it was, second and 15 is like, ho-hum, just a quick pass, and it's a first down. And it wasn't like it was a lot of run after the catch. It was just like Hill stopped in the zone, caught it, maybe gained like 2 or 3 yards, and it was a tackle. It was still a first down. So he's aggressive to a fault. And I think he needs to work on just getting those quicker passes and making a profit. I've heard that term used. You can't lose money making a profit. If you've got Jonnu Smith open underneath, you've got Devon Achane or Raheem Mostert open underneath, let them do their work. Those guys are good after the catch. There was a couple passes this year. He had a couple opportunities. He had Durham Smythe underneath and just didn't look at him. It's not going to be a big game, but he looked for something bigger, and it cost him. Those were turnover plays that he could have had. That he turned the ball over, and he could have had an easy completion for a small profit. So that's my biggest beef with Tua. I'm not worried about arm strength. I'm not worried about reading progressions or all that other stuff you're going to hear. Those other talking points. Learn to make the profit when you can make it. And when the big play is there, you take it, and he will. But you know, don't sit there and hold the ball forever. Don't worry about trying to make that big play if it's not there. Just look underneath. And Miami's got the talent to do that.
No, they've got plenty of talent, and they're only going to add more. That's the scary thing about it. Now, again, going back to the offensive line stuff, though, to see the best of Tua, I truly believe that we need to give him that time to actually sit back and relax and not feel like all quarterbacks have this like internal clock of how long they've been in there. Right. And I think that's part of what happened with the whole check down Chad nonsense was that who was it that I think I remember a story. Correct me if I'm wrong. That basically they had brooms attacking Chad Henne, being like, you've been in there too long. Get rid of the ball. You've been in there too long. Get rid of the ball. And he always threw to like somebody who's 2 yards away because there was nobody over there. And so, but that ultimately broke him. And you cannot, if you want to see the best of a quarterback, you can't do that to him. If his internal clock is ticking and thinking, I've had the ball for more than 2 seconds, I'm about to fall on my face because somebody's going to come and crush me. That's not a healthy standpoint for any quarterback.
Well, you've got to have that clock. And the problem is
clock, yes. Panic, no.
I mean, check down Chad didn't have it. Tannehill lacked it. Tannehill was inconsistent with it. There were moments that you could see him step up in the pocket and move around like he knew what he was doing. And then other times he would stand back there. I remember, I think it was a rookie or maybe a second year. He took a sack in which he held the ball for like 7 seconds. It was ridiculous. That's not Tua. I think Tua, as a matter of fact, I actually went yesterday and read some of Tua's scouting reports from college. And one of his positives was his mobility and able to make plays with his legs. I kind of laughed because I thought he probably did back in college, but that's not what we've seen in the pros. He's never going to scare you that way, but he can do that. And I think we kind of saw a little bit of that go away last year. I think, I don't know, out of necessarily concern for his body or whatever. But, I mean, and that goes back to the other thing, was pocket presence. I've seen a lot of people talk about how Tua has questionable pocket presence, and I would disagree with that. He does well.
You were the king of criticizing Tannehill's pocket presence. So if anybody would know what it looked like, it would be you.
Well, I mean, it's pocket. There's a play, and I mentioned this on the Finsider yesterday. Excuse me. Go back and watch the 2013. It's the Week 15 game against the Patriots. That's the Michael Thomas interception game. Late in the first half, the Patriots are up 3-0, and they are down. They're inside the red zone, and Tom Brady has a touchdown pass to, I think his name is O'o Manawanui, a rarely used tight end. But if you go watch that play, Tom Brady moves in the pocket so ridiculous. I have not forgotten it to this day. I remember watching it. He looked like a ballroom dancer in that pocket. He didn't take off and run or do something silly or try to make some kind of crazy off-script play like we see guys do today. He just very calmly moved around the pocket, got his space, and threw a touchdown pass. It was beautiful. I recommend everyone go back and watch that. If you want to see pocket presence, that's what pocket presence is. And, you know, going back to watching Marino had what, like 100 yards rushing for his career? Not a guy that you call a scrambler, but he can manipulate the pocket so well. And that's the type of movement that Tua does in the pocket. I'm not going to put him on that level. So don't misquote me and say I'm putting him on that level. But that's the type of movement he does. He finds those spaces. He steps up. He finds those gaps. He's not going to run around and create like a Lamar Jackson, but he's going to find those spaces. So, the problem is he just looks for that big play too often and will not take this. So you don't have to worry about him, the clock in his head going off. He's got all of that. He just sometimes he bets too big and doesn't take the profit.
And I'm going to go ahead and welcome Alfredo Artiaga. So he did manage to jump in here after all. So pleasant surprise for everybody listening. Alf, how are you?
Doing good. You hear me?
So, yep, we hear you. So basically the discussion right now was because I took it to Twitter to ask what should we talk about, because that's the point of the show, Pulse of Finns Nation. Finns Nation is on Twitter. So I asked, they asked, what are our thoughts on whether Tua should play on the fifth-year option or if he's going to get his extension. I've already made my point. It's not a question of if Tua should get his extension. He's going to get his extension. It's just a matter of when. It's more about skepticism from the fan base than anything. So my Duke's just explaining the only real issues at this point with Tua is, yeah, like he mentioned, you don't always have to bet big. Just take what's in front of you and roll with it, and he'll become – if Tua can learn to take small plays when it's there, he could become top two quarterback in the NFL, but he's got to learn to actually do that and not always try to find Tyreek or Waddle 20 yards down the field.
Well, yeah, obviously that's his next evolution. But for those that doubt that he's going to do that, he's been doing it since he got into the league. And, you know, the takes just get dumber. Joe Klatt has made this. I don't know what he's trying to prove with these. There's no way he's this ignorant.
Did I miss something?
Yeah, the Joe Klatt where he picked – in his mock, he picked Michael Penix. And I don't have it right in front of me. He basically said, they need a guy that throws with timing and accuracy down the field. And that's
Penix. This some draft analyst I don't know about?
I think he's on the NFL Network during the draft. But
oh, my God.
It was one of those situations where he said, tell me you don't watch the Dolphins without actually saying you don't watch the Dolphins. It was like the completely – it's like he took the stuff that Tua is really good at and said that's what this offense needs, but the Tua doesn't have it.
Yeah, he's an analyst for Fox Sports College, and he's essentially just, you know, thumping his mock draft over and over and over again, saying that Michael – and his latest – he always chases, like, the little blurb under it. His latest blurb is that Michael Penix would be an immediate upgrade at the quarterback position for Miami. And I thought somebody, this was a listener that gave this to me, which I thought was really interesting. Okay. Do you know what recruit year was Michael Penix?
Nope.
He was a 2018 recruit. He was a 2.5 star recruit. Do you know what recruit year Tua Tagovailoa was?
I'm going to guess 2018.
2017, just a year before Michael Penix. He was a 5-star recruit. Okay. So let's say that Tua Tagovailoa had never come out of Alabama, okay? He would have had a 2-year head start on Michael Penix. Even considering all of that, Michael Penix is only a year younger and played 5 seasons in college, and he didn't finish 4 of them. You finally saw him finish 1 season, and it was the one that you just finished seeing him lose in the national championship game. There is absolutely no argument whatsoever for Michael Penix being a better prospect or even on par with or in the same ballpark, same sport, same country as Michael Penix. I mean, as Tua Tagovailoa. It just isn't. There's no way. So, and I remind you, this is the same Joe Klatt that had Tua Tagovailoa as the number 2 quarterback prospect behind Joe Burrow the year that they came out. So to say that this is absolutely fake is being generous. He is absolutely creating a take here for engagement. And it's not working because his mock drafts don't get as much traffic as others.
Paul Holland saying, yes, give him the extension. I believe he will take the ultimate step and put up a top 10 NFL quarterback year. I mean, statistically speaking, he's already done that twice now. So if we're talking about results as far as wins and playoff wins, I guess that's what we're looking for next is just win a playoff game. And don't throw the bad interception at the last minute of a game. That would also help. But that's also part of the same discussion we've already had is take what's given to you. Don't try to force something that's not there. And especially not to Chase Claypool, who runs like a baby elephant.
Who's the quarterback that throws interceptions at the end of games?
Alf's biggest money manager.
Yeah, Justin Herbert, my favorite.
Just stirring the pot there, that's all.
I mean, it's the truth, though. And Herbert got his extension, and nobody's questioning whether or not Herbert deserved it or not at this point. At least I don't think so. Chargers fans, I don't think, are questioning it that much. But I...
And the Chargers are about to luck their way into Marvin Harrison Jr., and it makes me sick. Because, you know, everybody's talking about Arizona moving out and somebody taking that fourth quarterback there. It's going to be... It makes me sick.
I'm thinking, to be honest with you, all this JJ McCarthy is great ruse from the Chargers is because I think that he's trying to induce somebody to move up because he wants to trade out of the four spot. I think that's what Harbaugh's trying to pull.
I mean, it would make sense, right? That's his quarterback from Michigan.
Yeah, but not that he's going to take him. I'm saying that he's talking him up, like, for somebody else to come up and take him so he could get a pile of picks. Will it work? Who knows? Maybe somebody will. Maybe somebody will actually move up to go get JJ McCarthy. I can't fathom who will, but maybe there is. Maybe there's somebody out there. If not, I do think that they'll take either Neighbors or Marvin Harrison.
Who is, just out of curiosity, because I know that this is something that's being brought up lately, who is New England's GM now that Belichick's gone?
I don't know. They put somebody in charge there. I don't know who the hell that is. He was a guy that was part of the pro personnel department under Belichick. So that's who the GM's going to be. And I could unequivocally tell you that he's terrible at his job. Who the hell hoards this much cap space?
I mean, maybe that's what we're waiting for. We're going to get a J.J. McCarthy draft for the New England Patriots.
Yeah, but who hoards this much cap space? Like, what are you going to do with it? You're going to stare at it?
You're going to roll it over into the next season.
Yeah, you're going to
try
spend
again
it
next year.
You can't spend it all in 1 year because then as that escalates, you're going to have to cut the same guys that you signed a year later. So you got to be judicious with it, right? They didn't even make an effort for Christian Wilkins, and they had plenty of money to do the same deal or better. They would have to have beaten that Vegas deal because Las Vegas is a no income tax state and Massachusetts is not, but they're pretty terrible at their job. And I think we got lucky here. I think we have ourselves a stepping stone for a while now. Two free wins.
Indeed is just ripping the Patriots guy apart. Here he's big on wheat investing crypto.
They don't have, according to Wikipedia, they don't have a general manager. They have an executive vice president of football business. It's Robin Glazer.
So that's it's Tannenbaum's title, but he's the GM.
They have a director of scouting, Elliot Wolf. That's the only thing that looks.
He's known. He's a known commodity, Elliot Wolf.
Yeah, Robin Glazer is the EVP of football business, whatever that means.
He's Tannenbaum. That's what he was in Miami, executive vice president of football operations. It's the same thing.
Look, we're learning, and I was talking about this earlier this morning on OnlyFans, and since it wasn't the Dolphins, not many people wanted to talk about it. What we're learning this offseason is that some of the worst owners are also some of the luckiest. Clark Hunt, I don't know if you guys have been following this story. There's a vote that's going to take place in Missouri. I believe it's a local vote, and they're going to have to put up a new sales tax. I think it's a 2-cent sales tax hike to fix the Royals Stadium and to fix Arrowhead Stadium. Okay. And they're threatening the Chiefs, the defending Super Bowl champions, are threatening that if this thing doesn't pass, that everything is on the table. And you know what that means. When a franchise says everything is on the table, it means we're leaving. Okay, we're going to London or we're going somewhere else. Okay,
the London Chiefs.
Okay,
could you imagine if Patrick Mahomes up and moved to London all of a sudden?
Well, I'm gonna get to it. Oh my god, it was about 10 years ago, a little under 10 years ago, where Clark Hunt was getting a lot of complaints. This is way before Pat Mahomes, he was getting a lot of complaints that they had very low grade practice facilities, training staff, and he needed to put some money into it, right? So he did a cash raise of about $200 million and had promised that he was going to build a new training facility with that money. You know what he ended up doing with that money? He built the world's largest and most opulent suite inside of Arrowhead Stadium. It has 6 bedrooms. It has 3 stories and over, I believe it's 12,000 square feet.
It's in Arrowhead?
It's in Arrowhead. It's an actual house inside.
So that's Taylor Swift's room.
I don't know whose room it is. I don't think it is because Taylor Swift is seen in the end zone, and that's where Pat Mahomes' wife is, and Clark Hunt's is on the 50-yard line on the home side. So, yeah, he's a terrible owner, but he lucked into Pat Mahomes. That's what New England's going to have to do. They're just going to have to get lucky, take the right quarterback, and then that'll change their fortunes. Because if not, they're just in a really, really bad spot for a very, very long time.
And I could not care. I could not care less if they suck. They deserve it.
Ironically enough, since I wanted to talk a little bit about the press conference McDaniel had. He was asked how odd it'll be coaching in the division without Belichick, and he basically said to say that he's somber and mourning the loss of Belichick in the AFC East would be a flat out lie, and he's not going to lie to anybody. So,
look, Belichick as a GM, as a player personnel guy, was not that good. You can go back a lot of drafts to see that, but as an actual football coach,
I'm going to say it. Belichick's not that special. Because as soon as Brady left, the whole Patriots regime just went down the you-know-what.
Well, they did. But number one, it came with a bad quarterback that they traded for a 6th-round pick, I think.
Right. But head coach, the greatest of all time, should have been able to coach around that, don't you think?
Maybe he was trying to up the difficulty level. Because, I mean, he traded for Devontae Parker. And then side of Mike Gesicki, and Dolphins fans were like, you just watch those dudes here. You watch what they did, and you wanted that. So, as I said, as a guy who brought in the players, he wasn't very good at it. But his actual coaching, he was very good. So, I don't think his legacy is going to be tarnished. I don't think it's going to be anything, you know, with Brady or without Brady, whatever. I think they're inextricably linked forever. But I'm going to give him his props. He's a really good coach. He just wasn't good at buying the groceries. Good chef, not a great shopper.
Nah, listen, as a defensive coach, I'll give him that. But for me, if the only level of success you ever had as a head coach came immediately with arguably the greatest quarterback to ever play the game. And I hate saying that because I'm a Dan Marino person. I'm a fan of Dolphins fan. If the only reason you were any good was because Tom Brady was carrying you the whole way, you won how many Super Bowls? Six Super Bowls with Tom Brady as your quarterback. And the moment he leaves, the Patriots look pedestrian / bad the entire rest of the way that he's there. Like, the only success Belichick has ever had is with Brady. At least with Shula, you can say that he was successful with Marino, and he was successful with Greasy, and he was successful with whoever else had to play quarterback on that given day if Marino was not available. They won a Super Bowl, correct me if I'm wrong, with Earl Morrill, right? He was the backup?
Mm-hmm.
So, tell me how Belichick, with all of his grand glory, his amazing ability to coach, can't even get a break-even season with Mac Jones. Mac isn't so bad that he's like worse than most backups in the league. Shula had to work with backup quarterbacks and won Super Bowls with them.
Hey, but
Belichick can't even win a regular season game.
I will say this about him. The Patriots picked a great year to be bad enough to get a top 3 pick. So maybe that was the plan all along. So if that was, I mean, that's creative.
What plan was that? To make sure he can never win Shula's record?
Just to make sure that the Patriots were set up with a quarterback. So, but either way, it is what it is. The good news is right now, that the Dolphins are in contention for the division title with Buffalo. I think the Jets might be feisty this year if Aaron Rodgers plays, but remember, he's also old, an older quarterback, and that's just, you know, Father Time catches up eventually. So, you know, they're not set long term. So the Dolphins and the Bills are set up to do this, and the Patriots got a while before they're competitive again.
Yeah, they got a pretty nice little runway here, because you have the Patriots, who are as far away as possible, right? And then you have the Jets, who are a stumble away from blowing up the entire thing and selling off the team and beginning a total rebuild, okay? Like, if they go 7-10 this year, let's say Aaron Rodgers misses 5 games and they go 7-10, they're firing everybody. They're firing Joe Douglas. They're firing Robert Saleh. Obrecht is going to end up somewhere else, maybe even Miami as defensive coordinator. Maybe even Robert Saleh ends up as the defensive coordinator here if we're successful.
You don't think Anthony Weaver moves on? Around?
He'll be a head coach. Dolphins win like 12 games and the defense is really good. Anthony Weaver will be a head coach. We'll get a third-round pick for him, and Robert Saleh will be the new DC here. That's just a fact of life, okay? And then you have the Bills, who, if you could take out your calculator for me and you could add 2 + 2 and you could go on Spotrac and start adding up those numbers, it's getting a little tight over there, okay? Where are they going to start finding the money? Well, it's obvious that this is Diggs' last year as a Buffalo Bill. They're going to have to replace him, okay? If they don't even just flat out trade him in the offseason. So they're going to feel the pinch, and they're going to have to start transitioning their offense and their team away from what they used to do. Their defense has already transitioned, okay? So their defense should be weaker. Miami could be catching a golden generation here. And it's just about to keep replenishing here with these one-year deals. Like I said, they're going to have to do. And you're going to have to hit on some of these draft picks. It's as simple as that. But you got to keep your core. And part of letting go of Robert Hunt and Christian Wilkins is keeping this core that should dominate this division. They have every advantage in the world. And now they're getting advantages from the rules, and it's great to see that Chris Greer, and for those that wonder, oh, why is Chris Greer keep, you know, sticking around? Well, first of all, he's good at his job. Second of all, now he's on a committee of six on the competition committee. You don't think you want that? No, Miami has that.
I mean, here's my thing though. And this is going to be my last point before we start getting ready to wrap up, but how much faith do we have that they're actually going to throw Tyreek and Devon Achane out there for this new kick return? Because part of me is thinking, okay, they're still going to throw Braxton Berrios out there, because otherwise, what's the point of re-signing him?
I think Achane is a very, very strong possibility. I don't understand why you wouldn't use Waddle and Tyreek in like big games.
I agree with you. I 100% agree. I just don't know if the Dolphins.
I do know one thing. Look, Tyreek Hill was injured from the Tennessee game on, okay? He was doing things to get himself ready to play, which was, you know, which most guys don't do, all right? He toughed it out to be able to play toward the end of the year. Like a game against Buffalo, the last game of the season, like I would have had Tyreek Hill returning punts the entire game. Because you never know if that one time, just like it happened to us, we outkicked our coverage. We took one block, and then Cameron Good took a bad angle and blew out his knee and Justin Bethel out of the hole. And then they returned a punt for a touchdown, and that was the difference in the game, right? That could have been us. Like, if you have Tyreek Hill out there. And I remember this is something that Shula used to do all the time in the playoffs. Don Shula used to put out Mark Clayton to return punts in the playoffs all the time. And it was something that he never did during the regular season. Jimmy Johnson did it with Terrell Buckley. Okay. And then he started doing it with Brock Marion to return kickoffs. Okay. In big games and in the playoffs. So this is something that's been done before. And Tyreek Hill actually did it in Kansas City, if you remember. He returned punts in the Super Bowl. You know, if you remember 100%. If you remember that Super Bowl, they kept talking about, well, the 49ers are going to have to start kicking away from him because you don't want him breaking this game open. Well, Miami should, I think, should be doing something like that. In the regular season, I would have Devon Achane returning kickoffs. And then for that big game, whenever it is, I would actually put Tyreek Hill out there to return punts. I just would. And
I agree with the concept. I agree with the entire thing.
It gives your opponent something else to think about. You know?
It does, but I don't know if the Dolphins agree. That's just it. I feel like they're going to throw Berrios out there. I just got gut feeling.
And possibly Xavier Worthy, too.
Maybe.
Good projection, Duke.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter asked, you know, the year that the Dolphins need a good return man, they sign one of the worst in football in Braxton Berrios. And I was trying to explain this guy. The Dolphins have the three best return men in the NFL. Okay, and none of the three are Braxton Berrios. Devon Achane, Jalen Waddle, Tyreek Hill. And if you really want to get froggy with it, you could have Javon Holland return kickoffs because he's a really good return man as well.
Yeah, he returned punts in college, I believe.
Yeah, he did.
Anybody know what Jakeem Grant's doing? he'll get some touchdowns out there. He'll fumble a lot, but he'll get some touchdowns. And we don't have to worry about him as a receiver. All right. We're going to go ahead and wrap this thing up. Everybody, thank you all so much for joining us. We appreciate it, as always, all the comments coming in. And make sure that you're checking out OnlyFins, only $3 a month. The link is in the description below of this YouTube video. And this show is also going to be archived on the 3 Yards Per Carry podcast feed very shortly, so you'll be able to listen in if you didn't catch it live. Once again, go to prizepicks.com, use the promo code 5, that's FIVE, and they will match up to $100 on your deposit when you sign up. Those of you inside Florida, I promise you, they are working on getting you back in the game very quickly. And make sure you go to My Nintendo Store. The links are in the description below to get these two games. You'll get bonus items upon making your purchase. Plenty of stuff for you to choose from. We're done here. We'll see you all next week for another episode of Pulse of Fins Nation.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.